Well, good morning. My name is Matt Levi, and I'll be sharing some results of a predictive soil mapping project that we're working on in southern Arizona. And today I'll be focusing on some physical soil property prediction using a raster approach. So as pedologists and soil scientists, we're very familiar with the current status of the soil survey in the United States. And you can see from this image in the lower left, or your lower right, that much of the United States has been mapped with initial soil survey. But many of these data sets provide somewhat of a coarse resolution of soil properties. And this limits our ability to model landscape scale processes such as hydrology and soil plant relationships and responses to climate and differences in land use. So in response to this, the digital soil mapping community has progressed rapidly in recent years, and there's a tremendous potential to improve upon this soil prediction within these soil map units, and then provide detailed soil properties and also uncertainties in the predictions of those properties. So our objectives were to develop a data-driven soil prediction model in southern Arizona. It's a semi-arid region, and we're using remotely sensed reflectance and elevation data. And basically what our goal was to capture some of the variability within the soil map units. So as I said, the study area is in southern Arizona. It's actually in the Basin and Range province. And you can see from both of these images that there's a high relief. So this contributes to a diverse soil-forming environment and a very complex landscape. This is further complicated with a diverse geology. So soils such as formed on granite, soils formed in basalt, and all sorts of basin fill. So there's a lot of diversity that we're trying to capture and then predict. So we focused on one area of interest, which was about 15,000 acres. And we selected this area because it represents much of the variability that I just described. And this is variability in landforms and geology, and also a variability in the data sets we have available, such as reflectance and elevation data. So I'll just briefly orient you to this image. The yellow boundary is our area of interest boundary, and the black lines that you can see are the final soil survey lines. So basically this area has very diverse geology with basalt hills here, so soils formed on these volcanic parent materials, in contrast to soils formed in these alluvial fans formed from granite. So there's a diverse landscape here with lots of variability. So I mentioned these available data layers that we have, and those included Landsat 7, which we had a nice introduction in the previous talk. We were able to develop reflectance indices to represent soil geology and vegetation differences. And then we were very lucky to have a 5-meter resolution elevation data set, which we were able to then derive indices such as solar radiation and wetness index. So we came up with about 13 data layers from these available data sets. And then you might wonder, well, that's a lot of information, so how can you make sense of this? Well, we used a data reduction technique that utilizes an iterative principal component analysis. And I've previously presented on this. I can go into more detail perhaps at the end of my talk if there's time for questions. But basically what we did was group those indices by category. So you can see by elevation and by reflectance. And then we used this PCA data reduction technique to effectively reduce the 13 input variables to 4 important variables. And those 4 final data layers included Landsat ratio 3 over 2, which highlights carbonate radicals, the calcareous sediment index, which in our study area differentiated between felsic and mafic geologies, solar radiation, and the topographic wetness index. So we've effectively captured parent material with reflectance indices. And then with the topographic indices, we've captured the climate, organisms, and relief. So these are 4 of the 5 soil-forming factors from Yenny's factorial equation. So now we have important data. The next step was to develop a sampling design. And we chose a conditioned Latin hypercube sampling design, which is a stratified random technique. And basically what it does is stratify your data points within your feature space of available data. So those four important data layers that I just mentioned on the previous slide were used to develop the sampling design. So this is a simple two-dimensional example where you have your feature space here. So this is the cumulative probability distribution of data set one, the same for data set two. And in this case, you're looking to get five sample locations. So you stratify within these different data sets, and then randomly within each strata, you select a point to best represent that original data set. And this in turn gives you a good representation of the geographic space as well. So you're maximizing your interpolation between points and minimizing your extrapolation from points that you do not have. So then you might wonder, how many samples do you pick? Well, we evaluated a number of sample points from n equals 25 to up to around 200 or 500 points, and we found that a number of about 50 points effectively represented the feature data sets, so these auxiliary data layers, and also 50 points is reasonable when you're trying to conduct a field survey and all the lab analysis. So here is an example. Well, actually, this is the point locations of those points, and we ended up with 53 points. In the field, we decided to make a few extra points and decided to include those in the model as well. But you can see the same aerial photograph with the soil survey lines, and notice that there's a good geographic distribution of the points, and there's also a good distribution of these points within the different soil polygons. So now, to connect the auxiliary data layers to the location of the soil points. Well, those four final data layers that I mentioned, we used to then classify the landscape into 30 classes, and we used basically the principal components of those four data layers to develop this classification. And the point that I want you to get here is that the soil sample locations also represent variability in these auxiliary data sets. So that part of our study has worked so far. So the next step was then to go to the field. And at each point, we sampled to 30 centimeters by genetic horizon, and we measured a number of properties from coarse fragments and vegetation to chemical soil properties. But today I'm going to be focusing on some physical soil properties, particle size measured with a laser PSA, organic matter inferred from loss on ignition, and then the Munsell color, which was measured with a handheld colorimeter. And for Munsell color, we're summarizing that value with a redness rating, which incorporates hue, value, and chroma to provide an index of iron oxide content or soil formation. So here is a preliminary result. And the point of this is to say that many interpolation methods, such as ordinary Krieging, give a somewhat coarse estimation of properties. So this isn't much a gain above the traditional soil survey vector maps that I've shown you in previous slides. So we wanted to pursue another option, which has recently been developed, and it's called regression Krieging. Basically what this does, it allows you to remove any trend in the data with the regression. So if you look at this generic form of the multiple linear regression model, you recognize these beta coefficients and the X predictor variables, and you're basically accounting for the relationships between the variable, such as clay here, and these predictor variables. And we used principal components of those data layers because that way the independent variables are then non-collinear. There's no collinearity issues with the regression. And then you left with this error term. So we took these residuals, and then you try to basically capture any spatial relationships between the residuals across the landscape. And you effectively improve the prediction of the soil properties or other properties of interest with this approach. So here is a lovely map of surface clay estimation. I mentioned we sampled 30 centimeters, but this is showing data for just surface horizons. And I'll point out a few things, and then I'll show you several maps here. But basically, you have the prediction map here on top, and then you have a histogram of the pixels, the prediction values across the landscape, which effectively serves as the legend for the map. And then we're currently developing some more validation techniques for this, but basically to give you some sense of the variability from that the regression model was not able to capture, I'm showing you the Krieg residuals. So this is where the regression model had to be either added to by a value of the residual or a residual had to be subtracted from that value. Because what you're doing with regression Krieging is basically adding the regression value to the Krieg residual, and you effectively capture spatial variability and the relationships between dependent and independent variables. So remember, this is a granitic alluvial fan, so this clay content is very low relative to other areas, in contrast to the high clay content in the basalt hills of the volcanic soils. So now looking at the sand prediction map, and I just mentioned the granitic fans, well, they're very sandy. They have a sandy cap. This is overlying a strong BT horizon. In contrast to the lower values in the basalt hills, which are, again, very clayey. And I'll point out here that these maps really correspond well with the soil maps, the soil lines you see here. But we can get at more of the variability within these soil map units by using such a prediction approach as we show here. So this is an example of surface redness rating. And I mentioned, again, I'll keep going back to the contrast between the granitic fan and the basalt hills, because there is such a contrast in parent material and the soil properties in these landscapes. So very, very high redness rating captured with the prediction model. And notice how well this prediction model, which is independent of the soil survey lines, falls within the soil survey boundaries. So that's it's very great that the model that we developed independently of the soil survey is fitting well with the soil survey data that so many people use. So that high redness rating with high iron oxide content here in the alluvial fans is in contrast to the much darker soils formed on the basalt, which are roughly 10YR32 in contrast to 7.5YR46. So now moving on to a prediction of loss on ignition or organic matter. And notice here that the highest values are found in the basalt hills. So this area is dominated by grasses. So that contributes a lot of organic matter to the surface soils. And this is in contrast to the granitic fans, which have dominant vegetation of shrub species such as mesquite, and also a lot of bare surface area. So you're wondering now, how well does your model, you create all these pretty maps, but how well did your model work? Well, we are showing results here using those interpolation points. So to do that, I have the mean prediction error, which gives you an idea of whether or not you're overestimating or underestimating the values, root mean square error, and then the correlation between the predicted value and the actual value. So I'll just draw your attention to these correlations and that there are very strong relationships between the predicted values and the actual values. So that gives us some confidence in the model, and they're also very highly significant. So in summary, the principal component analysis of these auxiliary data layers were effectively predicted soil properties at 5-meter resolution, and this raster soil prediction approach corresponds well with the published soil survey. However, the regression Krieging approach gives us more detail than the soil survey can provide, which is going to be very important as we go on to some of our next steps, which are to then utilize these soil prediction maps of physical properties, particle size, and organic matter, and put them into a petatransfer function such as Rosetta, and then produce maps of hydraulic soil properties like your saturated conductivity and water holding capacity, as well as the confidence maps of those prediction values. So this is going to really allow us to get at the soil-water relationships in these semi-arid systems as we go through changes in climate and also changes in land use and so forth. So I just have a few references here, and I'd like to acknowledge my graduate committee and NRCS cooperative agreement, which has really been the foundation of much of this work, and also my graduate department, which has provided some funding to me. So I'll take any questions if you should have any. Thanks. That's correct. We use the laser particle size.
As a traditional soil surveyor, when you're texturing in the field, you would use a particle, you'd use the sedimentation technique in the column, right? So is there a published value that you can use to convert your LPPSA to like something that would be more equivalent to a traditional PSA method?
So you're asking if there's a way to basically convert the laser particle size value, which is on a volume basis compared to the traditional pipette method or sedimentation technique, which is on the mass basis. So I believe there is a publication in the works right now from our laboratory at the University of Arizona to relate the volume particle size analysis to the traditional mass-based particle size.
Did you find that you had good agreement just from
Yes, there's good agreement with the laser analysis value with traditional hand texturing. Of course, that depends on your experience as a soil scientist and in your field experience, but yes, there is very strong correlation. Okay, well, thank you. The histogram connection with the prediction map was actually done in ArcGIS. Yes. So you simply, the histogram will actually take the values and the color ramp of your prediction map. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
You mentioned something about the validation, and you use those data points to did the regression bringing on all the variables to predict those. Did you do any validation of your predicted maps using independent points now to see how well the predictions sort of close that were to?
Okay, so we are, this preliminary result here uses all the points in the model, but we are going to pursue splitting the data set into a validation data set and a model data set. So something like 70% for the model development and 30% to validate at unknown points. But we also have a great data set of field data that was done from the soil survey efforts. So we can also compare those points to this model. So. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.